Welcome to Paradise Found. I'm sure many listeners have read or have heard about the famous book, Paradise Lost, from the 17th century English poet John Milton. It is an epic poem in blank verse. The poem concerns the biblical story of the fall of man, the temptation of Adam and Eve by Satan, and the expulsion from the Garden of Eden. In this podcast, I present a viewpoint claiming the story of Adam and Eve is allegorical, and the paradise of Eden is a metaphor for the entire earth. So next time you are in your favorite place, close your eyes and imagine a paradise. Then open your eyes and realize that you have found it. Then consider what is causing our entire planet to not be a paradise. You will conclude the obvious, which is all the negative, evil actions of many, many, many people as the root cause. It's time to start working together, maximizing unity and expanding on the subject by discussing realistic and effective solutions. You can find more information in the directory of all my podcasts as they are released under my website for my book with the same title at www.paradisefoundbook.com. The book is divided into 12 chapters named after the months of the year with four podcast episodes per chapter.
In any case, the idea of special creation is really an idea for another time. If nothing else but the molecular biological evidence were available, it would be very clear that there is nothing in us that is qualitatively different from our nearest chimpanzee relatives. That then takes us to the present stands where these great chauvinism battles are taking place. One is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. We have not found life, much less intelligence, anywhere else yet. We send spacecraft to other planets to look for life. We construct large radio telescopes and listen if anyone is sending us a message lately. Both of these activities have led to occasional tantalizing data, but none of it of a sufficient quality to say that we've detected life or intelligence elsewhere. In our ignorance, the geocentrists find hope. They confuse absence of evidence with evidence of absence. You haven't found life elsewhere? There isn't any. We're the only living creatures on the planet, in the universe, on this planet. You haven't found intelligence elsewhere? There isn't any elsewhere. It's only here. We are at the center of the intellectual cosmos. And while I could give you what I consider to be a strong plausibility argument why this conceit is also erroneous, it's only fair to say that nobody knows the answer to this issue. We have not found life or intelligence elsewhere. We are in the course of looking. Maybe we will find it tomorrow. Maybe it will take centuries. Maybe we will never find it. And all we have to do is keep an open mind. There's no other approach. You don't have to make up your mind in the absence of evidence. And then finally, there is a new and, to my mind, bizarre field for this debate, something called the anthropic principle, which would be much better called the anthropocentric principle, which comes in strong, weak, and various shades of middling flavors. The weak anthropic principle says, if the laws of nature and the fundamental constants of nature were significantly different, then the paths which led to us would have been different and we wouldn't be here. That is unexceptionable, certainly true, no problem. But then there is a strong anthropic principle, which to my mind is dangerously close to the following argument. We would not be here if the laws of nature and the values of the physical constants were other than they are. Therefore, the laws of nature and the physical constants are as they are in order for the universe to produce us. God had us in mind at the time the universe was made, and here we are back at the center of the universe again. There are many things which can be said about this, including the point that Philip Morrison, among others, has made, that who has traced through? What other laws of nature and physical constants will lead to the functional equivalence of life and intelligence? It's impossible to do. You can also argue against it that it is not very vulnerable to experimental investigation. But I would just like to point out that there's something telling about calling it the anthropic principle, because the same laws of nature and the same physical constants are required to make a rock as to make a person. Why is it not called the lithic principle? So there's a strong and weak lithic principle. And in the strong lithic principle, the laws of nature and the physical constants are as they are, so rocks could come into being. Not nearly as satisfying, right? But if rocks could philosophize, I bet you we would hear nothing of the anthropic principle, and at the cutting edge of rock philosophy would be the lithic principle. I have only two slides. If I can show the first one, please. This is a absolutely typical astronomical photograph of what's called a star field. Now, focus is important, please. Oh, went right through it. That's pretty good. Ooh, back a little. Yep, good. Now, take a look up here. What you are looking at is some, I'm not sure, 10,000 stars, something like that. One in front of another, so that they seem so closely packed that from a greater distance or with a smaller aperture telescope, you could not even tell they are individual stars. This is what the Milky Way is. It's stars in line of sight so closely packed that it looks like a continuum of light. Many of these stars are more or less like the Sun. As I was saying before, it now looks as if planets are a frequent, if not invariable, accompaniment of star formation. And again, I ask you to consider the contention that the only life and intelligence in the universe is, let's say, that dot. No, not that one. That one right there. See? That's it. Nowhere else. Maybe. Hard to extrapolate from one example, and one example is all we have, but this is so resonant with the other human conceits I tried to outline in the Great Demotions that I am suspicious of it for that reason alone.
Welcome to Paradise Found. This is April, week number one, and the title of this episode is Measuring the Inconceivable Creation of the Earth. What you just heard is a recording of Carl Sagan's 1994 lecture titled The Age of Exploration, a portion of it. I selected this portion of his lecture because it illustrates his smugness towards people who believe that we hold a special place in the universe. He talks about the ancient civilizations who thought they were the center of the universe when it was obvious that they would, at the time, think that because science that we know now didn't exist. His confidence that extraterrestrial life exists is basically based on the fact that there's an infinite number of stars. What Sagan and other scientists fail to recognize is that all knowledge of the actions of the atoms and molecules which make up the physical universe is limited to our physical bodies. And our bodies are also made up of atoms and molecules. And we obtain knowledge from light rays providing data that we process in our brains. This is why Einstein's theory of relativity is so difficult to comprehend. What we actually observe is sort of an illusion on a grand scale. In addition, we cannot or want to travel outside our solar system. If intelligent extraterrestrial life exists, then the only possible positive thing that we could would result is that we can communicate via radio waves. But even this seems unlikely. All this interest and intrigue for space travel and extraterrestrial life is a waste of time, in my opinion. It makes us put less focus on preserving and protecting the paradise of Earth. It's really pure fantasy. And you could put your toy lightsaber down because there is no Darth Vader. Scientists who do not believe in God have a problem with the Big Bang Theory because it proves that the universe had a beginning, or as scientists like to use the term, singularity. If it was an infinitely large static universe, then you would not have to explain how it started and just say it was there. They also prefer to think as time is infinitely long, so that life could have formed from physical matter, and with enough time, anything's possible. In 2009, the Kepler Space Telescope was launched with a specific goal to find exoplanets, which are simply planets that are outside our solar system. This telescope can determine the size, the type, and how far away the star is. And it can determine the size of any planets orbiting the star by measuring how the light gets dimmed as it orbits around the star. Earth has many other factors for life. Besides being the right size and distance from the sun, the moon is also very critical. So it will be forever impossible to find an Earth-like planet using a telescope, no matter how powerful it is. The Kepler Space Telescope has claimed to discover thousands of possible Earth-like planets with zero information that they can support life. The only possible way we have to discover intelligent extraterrestrial life again is to capture radio signals using a radio array. Yes, it would be amazing to discover extraterrestrial life, but what significance would it bring to humanity? Again, we will never be able to travel faster than the speed of light. The speed of light is 300 million meters per second. E equals mc squared, so that 1 kilogram would require the energy of 300 million squared. 1 kilogram times 300 million squared, or 1 times 10 to the 16 joules. It's impossible. What if the universe is really sort of an illusion, like I suggested in an early episode? Perhaps we are spiritual embryos. We grow spiritually by growing, learning how to live a righteous life, and harness the power of love. Thinking we can go to another planet really, in my opinion, is a waste of time. Maybe there are other planets with life on them, but why care? Is there a scientist like Sagan to make a discovery just to boost his ego? If there is another planet with intelligent life, it would also be impossible to travel that distance, and we need to put a 100% focus on their paradise. We are blessed to have the Earth. We put less focus on discussing the important issues, which in my book and podcast is all about. We should focus 100% on preserving and protecting the paradise of Earth, not dream or waste our time looking for other planets we are unable to get to travel to anyway. In the following episodes, in April's chapters episodes, I want to expand on the idea that our paradise is the entire Earth. I want people to start thinking that we can return to paradise, viewing the Earth as a place, like Eden, to become enlightened by overcoming struggles and resisting temptation. I want to explore the idea that our paradise was never lost, and perhaps we can find it simply by changing our perspective. Let's start with how unique and special the Earth is by discussing some scientific facts that scientists now know about it, and discuss both the special and general theory of relativity. These theories are very difficult to comprehend for most people, and I want to discuss them with a different angle which people might understand. I think listeners may agree with me that we will never have or want to build a spaceship that will travel outside our solar system. It would be an exercise in futility. As I stated in the last episode, humanity has really come into to a T-intersection. We have two choices, two roads to go on. One of the roads, science says, Science Boulevard, and the other is Paradise Drive. Think of all humanity in a car and it could go one way or the other. Carl Sagan already made his turn down Science Boulevard a long time ago. Won't catch him. You can go one way, then decide to turn around and go another. It's the same way we have two choices to live our lives. We can either not believe in God and make every second count in our lives in the physical universe, or we can learn to live a righteous life, become enlightened, and become conscious in heaven. If we go down Paradise Drive, it does not mean we have to give up on science, but it restricts science to the only things that help humanity and helps us create this paradise. Science Boulevard leads to putting all of our faith into science and believing we will have a future like the TV shows and films, Star Trek. We'll solve everything with science and we'll be able to create Earth into a paradise. In reality, this line of thinking will not create a paradise. It'll create a hell because all the focus is put on science, not common sense and realistic solutions. We will believe in the fact that there are billions and billions of solar systems, as Carl Sagan often said. There has to be planets supporting life like Earth, and we can reach out to them. We will overpopulate the planet like China, and we will have no interest and people having their freedoms to become spiritually enlightened. Paradise Drive leads to putting all of our faith into God and maximizing stewardship over the earth, something we have miserably failed at. Either road continues with the science that differs. In this road, it only uses science to either expand our awareness and spirituality, or it leads to inventions that benefit humanity and helps us preserve and protect the paradise of Earth. As I discussed in previous episodes, I believe we are close to an end making life-altering scientific discoveries, and the so-called Fourth Industrial Revolution is filled with useless invention, garbage science, and ideas which will do great harm to humanity. The science and technology which benefits humanity would be to perfect our infrastructure, power, transportation, water treatment, and other infrastructure improvements which are more effective and non-polluting. The science and technology we need to scrap is creating the metaverse, GMO foods, pesticides, biotechnology, industrial-type farms, transhumanism, and many other garbage inventions which are simply not advancing humanity and spirituality. In addition, some of them are really dumb ideas that work so that we can overpopulate the earth and turn it into a hell. If you really look at the incredible odds, the amazing facts that science has discovered about the earth and how it was created, you cannot remain an atheist, in my opinion. I owe much to Eric Metaxas, who I reference his book, Is Atheism Dead?, in my book, Paradise Found. A good portion of his book discusses a lot about scientists who concluded with their faith in God in a metaphysical world cannot comprehend. Our bodies are made up of atoms and molecules of the physical universe. How could we possibly think we can? It's not just all the incredible scientific facts, but how we actually experience the physical universe itself. This is a deep philosophical question. In 2017, I went with my friend Ian to go watched the solar eclipse in the Chalice Mountains of Idaho. It was an amazing experience, one I will never forget. But did you ever wonder why the moon is the exact perfect size to cover up the sun? Did you know that an eclipse in 1919 made it possible for two scientists from England, Frank Dyson and Arthur Eddington, to show that light was affected by gravity? Einstein's theory predicted that light waves would be bent by the massive body of the sun. Stars cannot be observed, obviously, during the day with the sun drowning out their light. But during eclipse, Eddington and Dyson could measure the position and view the star. They then compared that in the actual location and could measure exactly how much the light was bent. This proved Einstein's general theory of relativity, and which at the time was viewed with much skepticism. General relativity has been used to predict numerous phenomena of physical matter in the universe, including the creation of the universe itself and the Big Bang theory. As I will discuss later, the moon also has incredible purpose of maintaining the Earth's orbit and preventing it to wobble. The theory of general relativity is the most powerful, beautiful theory of all science. Having this knowledge, I believe humanity will ultimately select turning down Paradise Drive, not Science Boulevard. Einstein created the general theory a decade after the special theory. The special theory has two basic postulates. One is basically that the speed of light in a vacuum is the same for all observers. If you're on a train inside a, for example, you're in a train inside the train, you don't see the objects moving, but watching the train from the outside, it is moving very fast. It is so fast, light is so fast that we don't comprehend this fact. What we perceive as being significant. Everything we see comes from the small bandwidth of electromagnetic radiation emitted from atoms and molecules. The light waves hits the molecules of the cells of your retina, which sends electric pulses via neurons to your brain. These light waves are the same speed regardless of how fast you're going. The general theory of relativity incorporates how we perceive the effects of gravity. Newton showed that the acceleration force of gravity on Earth is 9.8 meters per second squared. You have probably seen how NASA trains astronauts for zero gravity conditions by flying an airplane in a parabolic flight. On the way up, they feel twice as heavy, and on the way down, they experience zero gravity. Imagine being in a spaceship in space with zero gravity inside the ship, and you're accelerating the 9.8 meters per second squared. You would then feel the exact same amount of gravity inside the ship. But that's only in one single direction. Why do we see all objects around the entire sphere of the Earth in every direction in three-dimensional space also have the same force of gravity? What direction is the Earth moving? We know it all is also spinning, but classical physics would also tell us that the gravity would be depending on the location and what time you are on Earth. That's what's so hard to comprehend, is that's where the concept of space-time comes into play. Again, you do not see anything until the light ray hits your retina of your eye. That light ray takes some time before it enters your eye. Space-time incorporates the fourth dimension of time, such that we all see as a curve inward towards the Earth. You cannot really make a visual drawing of this, but the best drawing example is of thinking of a bowling ball on a trampoline, which is sunk into the trampoline. A marble would be put on the trampoline, and the marble would go around the circumference of it. But the illusion of space-time, however, is three-dimensional, and it wraps around the entire sphere of the Earth. Everything we learn about science is observing electromagnetic radiation. Our human bodies are limited to understanding the behavior of physical matter. Einstein was a genius, introducing the concept of an observer in different spacetimes. Astrophysicists study the light from distant objects using Hubble Space Telescope, but they know that the light can be bent and distorted by gravity. Then there are black holes, where gravity is so great even the light waves cannot escape. Physicists use linear accelerators to bombard atoms to learn more about their structure, but the research has really hasn't produced anything useful. At what point are we going to realize that science is coming to an end, and most of the current branches of science are exercise in futility? So much of physics is not based on reality, but what we see, and what we see depends on the light rays, which are manipulated. I believe if there is another life supporting the planet, like Earth, in the universe, and the people were advanced as much as they possibly could go, they would put 100% focus on preserving and protecting their paradise. They would also focus on growing their spirituality so that after they die, they ascend into the kingdom of God. But again, we would have not gotten to this point if Einstein and the fact that the moon is perfectly sized to cover the sun. Carl Sagan argued that we only need to satisfy two criteria. The star must either be similar to our sun, the star must be similar to our sun, and the planet must be similar size and distance from the sun. Since there are billions and billions of stars, we can assume there must be millions of Earth-like planets. But as it turns out, there are many other factors involved with the Earth maintaining an atmosphere and the conditions of life. The moon also plays a critical role in numerous other aspects critical to supporting life on Earth. Scientists believe that the Earth and the moon were actually created by a collision of two large masses, like a perfect billiard ball shot. The Earth is the only planet that has one large moon. Mercury and Venus have none, and Mars has two small moons, and Saturn and Jupiter have many moons, which are tiny to these massive planets. Our moon is 27% the size of Earth, and it helps the Earth and many other aspects. So in order to find a planet similar in size and distance from a star like the Earth, it also would require seeing that it has a large moon. And this would be an impossible task for the Kepler telescope. One very important thing to mention about Jupiter and Saturn also is that life on Earth would not be possible without them. They play a very vital role on protecting the Earth from being bombarded from asteroids. Either the asteroids get pushed away from the gravitational field, or they get absorbed into they either hit those very large planets. The Earth also has perfect size to support an atmosphere. Earth's magnetosphere is strong enough to protect its atmosphere from solar winds. The smaller planet Mars' magnetosphere is too weak, and the solar winds and its atmosphere were stripped away eons ago. If the Earth was much larger, it would have a greater gravity so that no water, methane, or carbon dioxide could escape. So again, then it would be inhabitable. So it's got to be a perfect size to have this exact magnetosphere. I mentioned February episodes about the UFO light sightings from NASA, which defied physical explanation. Whatever they saw, it accelerated and moved faster than the speed of sound without causing a sonic boom. So what if our spiritual bodies are completely exist outside of the physical universe and in the metaphysical? I think that these objects had to be from the metaphysical. God, knowing that we would eventually come to this point in understanding of the physical universe, would most certainly leave more challenges and struggles at us. And again, I think a paradise should be filled with struggles and temptations. It would be so boring without them, and we would never advance spiritually. I will go over several other amazing, unique aspects, requirements for the life on Earth, and the odd-breaking set of occurrences that led to its creation. In my mind, it should make anyone believe in God. I'm really not sure why atheists insist on not believing in God. The only explanation is they develop hatred towards organized religion. I'm going to save in August and those set of episodes. That chapter is titled Simply Water, and I want to discuss the amazing water molecule, which truly is the basis of all life. We have discussed the study of abiogenesis a bit, but I want to solidify the fact that we will never prove scientifically that life came from physical matter. I want to show that Science Boulevard comes to a dead end, but Paradise Drive leads to a paradise with scientific discoveries and technological advancements, which advance humanity, not degenerate it. The deep state globalists and the communist China will surely lead to Earth becoming a hell. If all the scientific data known to the world were put into an all-knowing AI computer, it would clearly come to the same conclusion to turn down Paradise Drive and to not go down Science Boulevard. Some of the scientific facts entered in this computer which will make it this decision are: first, we'll never be able to explain the Big Bang or the origin of life. And second, we will never be able to travel the speed of light. In fact, the fastest speed we could possibly ever go in space is around 450,000 miles per hour. People have to stop believing in these fantasies and put 100% on preserving and protecting the paradise Earth, and put more energy in living in a righteous life and becoming spiritually enlightened. That's sort of the topic for the next episode, which is titled, Our Paradise Was Never Lost. That's where I'd like to discuss the meanings of John Milton's book, Paradise Lost, and why I believe we have not lost it. We just need to change our perspective to find it. Let's go. Get out there and live each day to its fullest. Not for selfish pleasure, but to be happy, grow spiritually, and harness the power of love. Thank you.